We're going deep for our latest deep dives. The bench, the wings, Shemmy, Wanamaker, Langford. It's the Thursday Locked On Celtics. Millies, let's go. Rainy days back with the vengeance at all the real Celtics fans in attendance. This is the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my Siege jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the Siege, it's the best way. Melly. Thursday, the deep dive roll on. This time, we're getting into the backup wings. The guys on the bench, Shemmy Ojeleye, Brad Wanamaker, Javonte Green, those guys, and to see how they've contributed this season. I'm John Corrales of MassLive.com, thanking you once again for making this podcast the number one Boston Celtics podcast out there. And there are still advertising opportunities for those of you who want to reach this audience. Email me at lockedonceltics@gmail.com and we can get you started, especially through this weird time. There are opportunities, so we hopefully we can work something out. So joining me today to talk about the backups on the bench, the wings, is Nick Fryer, WEEI, covers the Celtics for WEEI. Nick, what's going on, man?
Hey, John, how you doing? Weird times, huh?
Yeah, this is a little different. Lately, but how are you holding up through all of this?
I'm doing all right. I mean, look, in the grand scheme of things, I haven't had to deal with many of the issues that unfortunately a lot of people are dealing with. But as you know, there's a lot more time to run now because gyms are closed, which kind of sucks.
Yeah.
But at least we can get out now. I don't know about you, but when all that stuff happened with Gobert and they had just been in town, I had a lot. I mean, people at the station and everything were worried because I had been there after he was around. So yeah, I self-quarantined for a little bit. And then Marcus goes and gets it. And then it's just been weird. Just a wild ride.
Yeah. I was saying to Chuck yesterday, the last time Marcus Smart spoke publicly was at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. And I was sitting directly across from him. Now, we had set up an interview room, so it wasn't a scrum. So we were trying to keep that recommended 6 feet apart. So I think, you know, and basically I got back from Indy and kind of stayed home. Like I, not like full on lockdown quarantine, but you know, I'd still go to the supermarket, but like, you know, keep my distance from people, not like pawing through things on the supermarket, like, you know, through the shelves. If I see something, I grab it and I take it. Like anything I touch, I take. So I'm trying to like be, you know, a good, responsible person as best I can while still, you know, getting supplies to live. But even back then when the bars were open, I wasn't going to any of the bars. The gyms were still open when I got back from Indy, but it took another like week and a half for them to close. And I didn't surround myself with all that stuff. I kind of like realized what was going on. Mass Live canceled all of our remaining road trips for the regular season. This was before,
really?
Yeah, this was before Gobert. Like we had on my way back from Indy, we had a conference call and they were supposed to go from Indy to Milwaukee. Tom was supposed to go to Milwaukee. He canceled that trip and we canceled all the rest. I was supposed to go to Memphis. I was supposed to be in Memphis today, actually. And if the regular season had continued, I was going to watch from home. So we canceled all of our regular season travel. So we had taken these precautions, but you know, I'm fine. I'm lucky. I have no symptoms. I'm keeping my distance from people just in case, you know, so trying not to be a spreader. It's weird.
Right, yeah. Cause that's the real issue. I mean, we're not in that demographic of, I mean, I know there are some people that are having issues, but I don't know if you have, you know, the immune system issues or whatever, but I don't fall into that category. I get worried about, you know, do I give it to a family member who goes and then sees another family member who's older who may have more issues? You know what I mean? That's right. Those are the people that I'm more concerned about. It's just
right.
You see what happened with Karl-Anthony Towns' mom and everything, right?
Yep. And you know, my mom, my mom and dad are in their early 70s, and my dad just had a double bypass, so he's fine, but, like, you know, this is not the time for him to be dealing with COVID-19, and I don't want to be the one that gives it to him, you know what I mean? So, like, he's recovered nicely from heart surgery. I don't want to have to put him through even more shit. So
yeah, definitely not.
Luckily, everybody's fine.
And as long as you keep them away from all those live podcasts that you're doing with Jay King and Sam, then they should definitely be fine.
Those are going to make people sick in a different way. But I
that's for damn sure.
I hope everybody listening continues to stay safe. We are trying to keep it light. We are trying to, you know, continue to keep some sense of normalcy. But, you know, do what you can to stay safe. And hopefully we can be out of this sooner rather than later. But in the meantime, we're still trying to talk basketball. I'm doing this with the 2008 replay in the background of Celtics-Milwaukee, that first Jason Tatum, like, big game in that playoff run. That's what we've been reduced to. Watching this.
Yeah, I'm watching the same thing.
Yeah. You know, Terry Rozier running pick and roll with, you know, I mean, we're about to talk about Semi Ojeleye, and, you know, these guys are out there. Greg Monroe's out there. Shane Larkin is still on the team. Like, you forget. Like,
yeah.
Some of these,
I forgot about Shane Larkin.
Right.
It's crazy.
Like, remember how important he was? He was like, he was huge in that stretch.
I like watching Marcus Morris back in the day. Don't get me wrong, but sometimes watching him run these ISOs, man, it's just like, come on, dude, doing a little too much.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that he was super ISO Mook in that year. Last year he mm-hmm. kind of tried to dial it back a little bit, but, you know, this was Semi Ojeleye's first run with the Celtics, and why don't we use this to transition into this discussion here with the Celtics bench and focusing on the wings. I find it hard to be overly critical about these guys. Because they are all in a what the hell do you want from them kind of state. Like, we're relying on Semi, Wanamaker, who else on the wing off the bench? Javonte Green, Romeo Langford. And it's unfair to be overly critical about some of these guys. But Ojeleye, this is his third year in the league, and I feel like he's a good place to start because he started the year shooting just poorly. And he's kind of recovered, but he's let's look at the numbers, and I'll tell you, like, they can swing so widely because he gets so few, like, opportunities. His splits in November – hold on. Let me get the right things, because I was looking at Enes Kanter's numbers for a second. his splits. Okay, so in November he shot 38% from three, December 41%, January 33%, February 33%, and March 41%. But the difference between December shooting 41%, which is great, and January shooting 33%, which is bad, it's December he shot 9 of 22 from 3, and in January he shot 8 of 24, which is virtually the same number.
Exactly. Yeah, it's the thing that's so tough too. I mean, just from, like, you know, you talk about how we haven't been able to go to practice and stuff. Early in the year, we saw at the end of every practice session, there are guys that are working hard and everything and putting in that extra time at the end when we're waiting to, you know, do interviews, but Semi is always one of those guys who lasts the absolute longest. It's always him and Hayward shooting around, especially early in the year, and it was just mind-boggling that he couldn't seem to find his flow at first. But yeah, I mean, the thing with him too is, John, he says he trains right to play a full 48 minutes, but you can't replicate game reps. There's nothing to substitute for that. So when he's going and getting these infrequent minutes, and then you see, oh, he's playing, what, 20 minutes against the Sixers, 20 minutes against the Bucks. He's getting these big minutes in these big games. He's that's really when he's getting his opportunities. He doesn't have a chance to find a flow. And that's kind of like where, like, when you say it's not fair to judge them, I would say him more than or be overly critical. I would say Semi maybe more than anybody. I kind of feel that way.
Yeah, it's tough. And Brad Stevens has said multiple times that the people that he really, really respects when they play basketball is the guy who can come off the bench and contribute right away. Those guys, he has a special affinity for because he knows how hard it is. It's very, very difficult for a player to come off the bench and be just good right away. Come in, hit your first couple of shots. That's what makes guys like Lou Williams like a little something special. Like you come in off the bench and you come in like you've just been playing for 6-7 minutes. There's something to be said for getting into the flow of the game. And I think it's especially for Semi Ojeleye, because I watched him closely. And in practice, I watch him shoot, and him, like you said, it's him and Hayward all the time shooting together. And I watch him shoot, and his shot looks so good. And sometimes when I watch him shoot in games, it feels like he's shooting faster. Like his biggest issue to me is he's either not shooting in practice at game speed, or he needs to slow down his game speed to be a more comfortable pace where he's shooting like he shoots in practice. Whichever one of the two needs to happen, I think he needs to kind of like sync that up. Because what ends up happening, you ever watch like a TV show or a video where the sync is off and the lip is just moving a little bit and the sound is just like a tick by? How annoying is that? How annoying is that?
It's absolutely the worst.
That to me is what's going on with Semi Ojeleye's shot between practice and games. There's some sort of disconnect between the speed and what you see in the game is that sync is off sometimes. Now it's gotten better, but when he's not hitting, I feel like he's going too fast.
Yeah, I think it makes total sense. And in going off of him getting infrequent minutes, it all kind of lines up because he's going in he has practice reps. And now I tend to agree with you. I think the former is more the issue. I think that he tends to go a little bit slower, almost maybe deliberately in practice to kind of focus on getting a fluid motion or whatever. But in those games, he maybe feels that pressure, and then it's coming out of – he's trying to get out of his hands too fast. But I think when he starts getting more minutes, that's kind of where you find that rhythm of what my game speed is, and then you can kind of translate that to practice more. But, yeah, his shot definitely looks different. Like him and Carson Edwards are the two guys for me that jumps out to most when you look at what they look like in practice and what it looks like in games. Edwards more so than Semi, but – yeah, that's definitely been a problem for him.
I feel like maybe Semi is a little – he's got a little too much energy when it comes to the – like if he were – I really wonder if he was a starter and played 32 minutes a game, how his game would look. And you don't see that very often. I don't know when the last time is he started a game because –
it was against the Jazz, I think, right? That was the last time he started, and right after he put up, what was it, 22 right. against the Cavs?
Right, right. So he's I got so many freaking tabs open.
I got you here. I got you on this one. So against the Jazz, he scored, I think it was 9 points, 4 for 10 shooting, 1 for 4 from three. But the game before, he'd been 8 for 11 on he played 30 minutes, and he went 5 for 8 from three. And that was, I mean, he's against the Cavs, so take it for what you will. But I do think there's something to that, to him. Him getting just even regular minutes, John, because you talk about how Brad respects those guys, but there's like for Lou, he gets regular minutes. And that's why when it comes to Wanamaker, I don't hesitate necessarily as much to be as critical, even though it's really his – I mean, he's getting more minutes than he did last year and his role is a lot different. I still think that he gets a lot more time than Semi does throughout the court – or he has throughout the course of the season. So I think it's a little bit easier to judge him and say, like, this may be what you see is what you get with him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at his starting splits now. He's definitely shooting better overall. There's not a big difference in the 3-point percentage, but, he's more of a plus, I guess, when he's a starter. I guess that makes sense. He's playing with better people. I feel like, I like Semi. Let me just put this out there. I like Semi. I think he's got a real role in the NBA. Like, I feel like he can have a 15 to 20 minute a game role in the league. He's a good defender. He can shoot the three. Like, he's still shooting 30, almost 37%. That's acceptable. Like, it's above league average. That's acceptable for a guy that plays the level of defense that he does. That's, I think that there are things that he can do. He just can't have these wild swings. Why don't we take a second here? We'll come back. We'll regroup. And we'll fold in some of the Wanamaker discussion and kind of wrap up the Shemmy talk. I mean, obviously, you guys can tell from me trying to flip between all of these tabs. Things can kind of get a little bit hectic for me, so I need things simplified. And that's where this app that really is kind of like a life hack comes in for me, because it's hard for me to find the time or the discipline to sit down and read and learn more. If you don't have free time, you can't read on your or work on your personal development, this app solves that problem. I highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. It's unique. It works on your phone, your tablet, a web browser. It takes the key takeaways, all of the stuff you need to know from thousands of nonfiction books, condenses them down, boils them down to just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. Successful people, business leaders, Brad Stevens, coaches, all of these guys, they're well known for reading a lot of books. Blinkist is made for busy people like me, like you, who need to get to the main points of a book quickly so you can start using that information right away. With its audio feature, Blinkist makes it look very easy to finish a book during a commute, a lunch break, a run, when you're exercising, all of that. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now, and it has a massive growing library for self-help, business, health to history, all kinds of books. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestsellers and classic nonfiction titles, even if you want to read that like you've always meant to, but you've never had the time. Now's the time. You can really get a lot of them in when you go through Blinkist. And with this special offer, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want for one low price right now. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA. Try it for free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/NBA to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Wrapping up the Shemmy Ojeley talk, I'm really curious to see, as Brad Stevens, just assuming that a playoff is coming somehow, some way, he's going to pump up the minutes of all of the wings for sure. Like, we're looking at, and especially with this layoff, maybe they can get Kemba back up to a level where he's playing 36, 37, 38 minutes a game. Where do you think Shemmy fits? Do you think he can get a regular role in the playoffs?
I think he has to have a regular role, because when you worry about those physical bigs, I mean, look, I know there's not many Joel Embiids in the league, but, and I know you guys have talked about it a little bit, if the Celtics go and face the Sixers in the first round of the postseason, let's say that, because that would be what happens, right? If they don't play, if they just jump right into the postseason, they play the Sixers, right?
Yes. Right now they're slated to face the Sixers, which is
okay.
Which is
so bad news. if they go and face them, you have Horford, you have Simmons, who, you know, obviously, physical ball handler and everything. You have Embiid. You need Shemmy in the mix in that one, and we've seen him play in those games where you have big starting lineups and everything. Tobias Harris too, another guy you got to worry about. So I think you have to use him more, just as much as anybody. When they're going to tighten up these rotations, you know who their top six guys are. I would think that if he's going to keep it at eight, even maybe even seven, I would eight. You would have to have Shemmy in the mix as one of those top eight guys. From there, you figure out, you know, is it Robert Williams? Is it Grant Williams as that seventh guy? And then maybe one of those two, off the bench. I would think that Wanamaker's got to be – I would tend to think he's going to at least see a minutes decrease if you have a healthy Kemba and a healthy Smart.
Yeah, I would say that that tends to be where I'm thinking too. Like, so Wanamaker has spent plenty of time being like very good this season. He had some real, he had that one stretch earlier this season where he was like a 50-40-90 guy, you know, in November, in 14 games where he shot 43% from three, just about 90% from the line and 52% from the field. I mean, that stretch was just phenomenal from him. Since then, he's cooled off a little bit. I don't know. Like, he's averaging, what, like 20 minutes a game or so? 19. I don't know that the minutes got to come from somewhere. And I don't know that as much as Brad Wanamaker has helped, he's got some limitations that you just can't. He's not exactly fleet of foot. He's not going to be like he's a tough defender, but you're not going to count on him to stop Ben Simmons. Like, he's not going to be the guy that's out there getting minutes against, you know, any one of these elite point guards that you're going to find. I think that he's the one that probably stands to lose the most minutes.
Yeah, he should. I mean, and before I have a question for you with this jump, but first, I swear to God, I think that Brad Wanamaker gets called for travels more than anybody in the league right now. There may be one other guy, and I can't think of who it is, but whenever I watch on League Pass, it's like, nope. There's like always kind of one guy on the team, but Wanamaker, right? He's got to get it more than anybody.
You know, I haven't really thought of that. I haven't really noticed that.
It happens at least once a game, maybe twice a game.
It's like a little shuffle on his feet.
He's him. Yeah. And he always gets – it's like, you know, you got the war on ice, and then Wanamaker gets called for a travel like once a game. Huh. I swear. It's crazy. What I got to ask you, though, with Wanamaker is, you know, you said it. He had a good stretch at the beginning of the year. He was much more productive offensively than he is now. And defensively, I mean – he was fine. Now it's, you know, I think he's becoming somewhat of a liability. It seems like he's getting smoked every night. If his physicality isn't playing, then he's not going to be effective on that end of the floor because that's his strength. Do you think that because last year he played in like 36 games, he really didn't play all that much? Do you think that now he's played, what is it, 63 games this year, I think it is?
Yep.
And then he's averaging almost 20 minutes a game, like you said. Do you think that this is all kind of catching up to him because he's not used – because he had that, you know, bit of a break from playing overseas, and then overseas, as you know, is not the same as playing over here in the league? Do you think that's kind of catching up to him?
It's an interesting theory. Like, yeah, because you play overseas, you're not playing 82 games. You're not playing 3 games in 5 nights. You're playing like 2 games a week. This could be – there could be some of that. I would think that by now he's kind of used to the grind, but I mean, this certainly is the most minutes he's ever played in the NBA. Like, he's at 1200 minutes, and that's just about four times what he played last year. I don't know that that's enough to kind of like wear him down or cause any sort of lasting fatigue. I think honestly what it really is that he's not that great of an NBA player. And the more he plays, the less, you know, ultimately the less productive he's going to be. Like, his level is what it is. Like, if you're asking him to play 20 minutes every night, there are going to be stretches where he's just not very good. There are going to be some stretches where he struggles, and maybe there is fatigue. I'm not going to say there isn't. Maybe there is fatigue.
But I think you raise a good point though. You this is what you get. You play him 20 minutes a night. It's going to be hot and cold. If you played him a little bit less, he still had a role. Then he might be more effective.
Right. There's a reason why he didn't crack an NBA roster until he was 29. And now look, he's still like, we have to be clear. That still makes you one of the best basketball players in the world. Like, I really don't want to shit on him here and make it sound like I'm disparaging his basketball skills and career. He's had a distinguished European career, like a lot of success over there. And he's been good. Like, he leads the NBA in free throw shooting. He's still reliable, generally speaking. Reliable from three, reliable in the game. Brad Stevens doesn't miss an opportunity to call him a pro. Like, he's a solid guy, but he has limitations. And at 30 years old, you know, he's also like this for a guy of his level, 30 could be the beginning of a decline as well. Like, some players, this is like the tail end of his prime, but like some guys, this is where you start to lose like a half a step or so. And not all guys can play until they're 36 and 37. Some guys, their careers end a little earlier. So I think there's a lot at play with him, but NBA level skill, I think this kind of production for him is kind of what you get up.
Yeah.
And down.
The other,
good.
Sorry. The other thing you run into with him is behind him is Tremont Waters. And as much as, you know, there's a substantial size difference, you look at Wanamaker, and one of the big reasons he gets so many minutes, like we said before, was Kemba's been dealing with injury issues. You have Smart's been dealing with stuff. I mean, all these guys are dealing with issues, and he's a ball handler. And you only have so many of them on the team. You know, Hayward deals with problems too. So when you run into that, you need to rely on him more than you might want to necessarily. And he maybe take away minutes from Shed. I mean, like we've seen when looking at the numbers. With Tremont Waters, obviously he offers another ball handler. Scouts have been high on him. We've been hearing that. I mean, I'm sure you've been watching him when the games have been on TV and everything. He looks good. I mean, he still has room to grow,
sure,
but he looks good. I would think having him right behind Wanamaker is going to create issues for him, at least around here, moving forward too.
Yeah, I mean, we got to see what they do with Tremont. I like Tremont. He's so skilled. Like, I think he's a very natural point guard. He knows the game, but he does have limitations as well. Like, his size is definitely a limitation, and he has to prove that he can overcome that. And
yeah,
I don't know like what his future is. I don't know if it's in Boston. The Celtics definitely need to figure out that third string point guard, but you're right. Like, they don't have Wanamaker here to play this exact role. Like, Brad Stevens, he has a strong awareness of the length and difficulty of the NBA season. And he knows it's a marathon, and he's going to play rotations that some coaches may not. He's going to keep minutes low for his main guys. Even sometimes when you think, why didn't you put this guy back in at this point? Why did you wait an extra 2 minutes? Like, he's constantly trying to steal minutes here and there. So I think for a third string guy, they probably want somebody that's maybe a little more accomplished than Wanamaker, but also Brad trusts him to a certain degree because, like you said, like I said, Brad always said he's a pro. Like, you know that he's not going to crush you, like turnover wise. Like, he's not going to like lose you a game, but he also may not do enough to like, he might also be playing like, what do I say, poorly enough to make you wonder why he's in the game sometimes.
Yeah, he's kind of like a neutral guy. Like, you look at him. I'm not even looking at his plus minus right now. But if someone said he was a zero, then like when it comes to plus minus, you wouldn't be stunned by it necessarily. Yeah. But yeah, I think that the other thing too is whenever anybody asks about Brad too, because it's like we I don't know how much you talk to him, but he doesn't talk to us as a group a ton. It seems like all the guys in the locker room respect him a ton, whether it's Jalen, Jason, or any of the younger guys. And I mean, he's, as much as he's not as, he doesn't have as many years in the league as some of them, he's still, you know, an older guy. So he kind of understands, he's dealt with adversity. So I think that kind of plays into it too. When you talk about Brad, you know, Stevens trusting Wanamaker, that kind of falls into that too. And then with Waters, as much as I like him, I do think that there's like a little bit of growing up to do for him. It's, you know, it's tough too for, I imagine, for guys going through the G League and everything. It's a little bit different. You used to be in the top dog and then you just go to the league and that's it. But now there's this whole, you know, minor league process. So I think that that's something that he's had to deal with too. I think a lot of guys have to deal with that when they go play in the G League. It's just it's a different experience. It's different. I mean, you know, from watching it for 5 minutes, it's a different brand of basketball from the NBA. So that's that too. But yeah, when it comes to Wanamaker, there is definitely some value there. But I just wonder if at some point they're going to look at, you know, what I mean, going into next year, he has a higher ceiling. It's time to invest in him now, you know, because they're going to have to make some decisions in the offseason. I know we're looking at the postseason, but there will be some decisions they have to make, I would think, come the summer, whatever the offseason looks like.
Right. Like, we're just sitting here talking about, like, hey, remember Shane Larkin? Like, we may be like that in a few years. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, remember Brad Wanamaker? Oh, yeah. Like, I don't know what his overall future is going to be. I like him. Again, like Shemmy, like, it's hard not to like these guys, but it's clear that when the playoffs roll around, he's probably going to lose a fair amount of minutes and only be used in emergency situations. His DNPs are going to probably go up, and that's going to be that. Let's take a quick break, come back, discuss like the rookies. We'll get more into Tremont. We'll get into Romeo Langford, Javonte Green next here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. So you mentioned Tremont Waters at the end there. He's going to be an interesting guy. Obviously, as a two-way player, he's not going to contribute in the playoffs because he can't. So, but he does. When a player has certain skills that you can see are either elite or can be elite, then you have to take a closer look at him, despite having some deficiencies. So obviously he's small, but I think his playmaking and his ability to see the floor and his basketball IQ is a very, very high level. Like, I think he's going to have a very long basketball career, whether it's with the Celtics or someplace overseas or whatever. He's going to make a lot of money over the course of his life playing professional basketball. But I wonder if he's gonna stick in the NBA, or if he's gonna have, like, I don't want to say Isaiah Thomas, because I don't want to make all small guys Isaiah Thomas, but you know, there was everywhere he went, like, they didn't quite believe in him until, like, he came to Boston. Like, I just saw him tweet saying, you know, part of why he loves Boston is because they finally believed in him. Like, I don't know if Tremont's just going to be in a constant I have to prove it mode, or frankly, if he's ever going to just live life outside of I've got to prove it mode. Maybe prove it mode is the thing that gets him to be as good as he is. But he might be the guy I'm most curious about, because he can do so much. The way he sees the floor, he turns the ball over a little bit too much. But the way he sees the floor and his stop and start and his ability to create his own space and shots, he's very good at that.
Yeah, he is. I mean, and I think when I don't remember if it was Brad or Danny, but one of them talked about it, I feel like, a little while back in the course of things when Tremont was getting brought up, or when he was thriving down in Maine, or up in Maine, I guess I should say. They were talking about, like, they knew he was good, but he has surprised them, it seems like, to some extent too. And then, of course, you know, the reports that our scouts are knocking on the Celtics door about him and everything, like their teams are, excuse me, based on what scouts have seen. So it's like. I think you're right. I think there is something there, and I think the Celtics, if anybody is going to show belief in a little guy, I think that, you know, the Celtics would be one of those teams to kind of do something like that. So, and he's different than Isaiah too, in the sense that I think he's a much better playmaker. I don't think that he's necessarily necessarily as good of a scorer, but also he's at a different point in his career than when we saw Isaiah in Boston. But I think that he is his ceiling is a good backup point guard who can provide you some shooting, some offense. I mean, I think scoring at the rim will be a challenge for him as much as he's been good at it with Maine. I think that he's got to rely on his outside shooting, and but then when it comes to his playmaking, he makes a lot of good passes. He sees the floor extremely well. I mean, we're all gushing over Marcus Smart and everything that he's done this year, and I'm not saying that Tremont's making those crazy behind the back passes or anything, but when it comes to vision, I mean, I don't think Tremont's much different than where Smart is right now. I would probably say he's better.
Well, that's pretty good, and I agree that his vision is really, really good. I would like to see him do it. I want to see him get more NBA minutes just to kind of see if he can continue to do that against NBA level defenses.
True.
There's one thing about the G League is that level, the drop off of in talent between NBA and G League is just significant.
It's crazy. I mean, Carson Edwards, right? He goes and scores 32 when he's up there, and then around it's a lot different, like you said.
Right. So I agree. I want to see how it translates. I guess maybe I say Tremont. I'm very interested in him. Really, the answer is Romeo that I'm most interested in, or we should all be most interested in, because he's the guy that could hold the key to a lot of what Boston does in the future. Not that I expect him to be develop into a star player or anything. Maybe he will. I don't know. I really don't know. But he's a wing. He's on a rookie contract. It's a cheap rookie contract, comparatively speaking. It's the middle of the first round. He's shown the ability to play defense. He's working on that jump shot. It's possible that he can work his way into a spot where does somebody become expendable because of him? How good can Romeo Langford be? And can he force the Celtics to maybe, I'm thinking about Gordon Hayward. If Gordon Hayward, this is one potential road. We've got this hiatus. The NBA's losing money. They come back and say, hey, next year the salary cap is going to be, whatever, $100 million instead of $115. Nobody's going to have any money. And he's going to look at this and say, you know what, I'm just going to opt in. Even if I want to stay long term, all of a sudden this $34 million is ridiculously high. I'm going to opt into this money. And then next year we'll negotiate a long-term deal. In the process of 1 year, can Romeo Langford do enough where the Celtics say, two more years of Romeo Langford on his rookie contract and then whatever his extension is going to be is much more value for us for what he does versus Gordon Hayward and 3-4 whatever how many years on a deal for him at the back end of his career. He just turned 30, so it'd be 31 when he signs this deal. Do the next few years of Romeo Langford provide enough value where they say, hey, we love everything Gordon does, and he does a lot, and he's certainly better than Romeo Langford at this point, but the contractual value, that $30 million difference between him and Romeo Langford, can Romeo Langford do enough, do you think, to make the Celtics go, let's start really crunching the numbers here?
I think that's not a bad theory. I think that what it comes down to, though, also is where else are you going to get that offense from? I know Hayward's not going and scoring as much as Jalen, Kemba, and Tatum, but he's right there. And one of the issues with all these guys across the board is the amount of offense that they provide. I mean, that's been one of the biggest gripes, whether we see it on Twitter or whatever. It's what is the offense, what is the bench providing for offense on a nightly basis? It's pretty much Smart, but he's been starting so much. And then Cantor, but you guys talked about it last episode. How much do you trust him? How much is he going to play in the postseason and things like that? what does Romeo Langford turn into when it comes to his offense? Does his shot – it's gotten better. I mean, obviously he had the hand issue and everything when he first got here. It's gotten better, but is he going to be able to shoot at least, you know, league average? He can get to the rim well, but if he's not shooting league average, then I still kind of have some level of apprehension. And are there other guys that are going to be able to pitch in? I mean, is Shemmy going to become a better scorer? Does Carson Edwards take that step forward too? Where now it's like, okay, Romeo is going to provide that defense. We've seen that. He's only going to get better, I would think, when it comes to that. But there are still other question marks that Hayward, as much as he can be up and down and there's still question marks with him, and I totally get the value stance that you've taken on this, and I think it makes a lot of sense, actually. But it's just there are other question marks where I don't know. I do question if Romeo can be that definitive answer when they look at it and say, yeah, we can make up for that offense elsewhere if we get rid of Gordon and decide Romeo is going to be a more regular part of the rotation.
Yeah, I mean, to answer my own question, like right now, I wouldn't put money on that. he's got so far to go as far as, like, for him to get the Celtics to think that, he really has to make amazing leaps. Like, and really, honestly, this that's happening right now hurts him a lot because there's nowhere for him to shoot. I mean, unless he can find himself a place to go shoot all the time, if he's stuck at home doing nothing but making TikTok dances, then he's going to be doing like what he's going to kind of atrophy as far as the progress that he's made. The thing that he needs to be doing like right now is like they need to get some sort of half court somewhere, lice all the shit out of it, make sure that he's safe, get him in there and have him shoot under the watchful eye of a trainer. Maybe you stick a robot eye in there and use one of those little robots and a microphone to kind of watch him. And then you're like, hey, no, you're too much thumb on that. Like he needs to have constant work. And for him to get to a level where the Celtics even think to what I suggested, he has miles to go. Now, the defense that he showed us is great. That's something that we didn't think he would have. That's new. And I'm happy to hear him say, hey, to get on the floor for Brad Stevens, you got to play defense. And that's important. My guess is that I hate projecting guys out after, 27 games in the NBA, but like maybe the Celtics look to him as eventually just a guy that comes off the bench and helps the Celtics that way, or maybe give him more time. And in 3 years when, you've signed Gordon Hayward to a little extra, whatever it is, you kind of swap places. And the last 2 years of Gordon Hayward's career are coming off the bench, and Langford ascends to the starting role that way. And that's a possibility too.
Yeah, I mean, that could definitely work out too if Hayward's willing to eventually become a bench guy in the course of things too, and how he adjusts his game. I mean, we've seen he's had to adjust his game a lot, whether it's the layout of the team or his injuries and everything. He's had a lot of obstacles. But yeah, I mean, his shot is definitely I would say defense and his shot right now are the most important things, is what it comes down to. His defense, the athleticism's there and everything like that, so I'm not as worried. But I think that, yeah, coming off the bench and taking over one of the roles that maybe Wanamaker or Shemmy has right now, I mean, he brings something different than Shemmy does on the defensive end. But I think that when it comes to Langford, there's a lot of unknown. There's potential, but there's so still much. A lot of unknown. And it's just there's when they first got him, it seemed like, oh, this is an odd pick. I mean, we all thought, right, if Hero was still left, they would have probably gone with him. But there's definitely more. I like what I've seen from him so far. I will say that.
Okay, and let's just quickly do Javonte Green, who was a surprise this year, hasn't played much. I'd be surprised if we see him in the playoffs. But has he done enough to, like, quickly give me your impressions of him so far this season? And has he done enough to, like, be a part of the Celtics' future in some respect?
Well, first of all, I mean, his highlight reel dunks are outstanding. I love those. I can't get enough of them.
Fantastic.
But on a serious note, the big thing with him is that I've been kind of waiting for is what is he going to look like on the defensive end? When we hear that Danny Ainge was telling him all, he reminds him of Tony Allen in the summer league or whatever it was, or in workouts and everything. That's pretty generous, I think, for anybody to say a guy, you remind him of Tony Allen. But at the same time, I want to see more than what I've seen out of him on the defensive end. And when I've talked to, you know, I remember talking to Kemba about him at one point, and he said that his three-point shooting is the big thing that he needs to kind of improve upon too. So it's similar to Langford to some extent, but I think that, you know, age, there's a difference there too. So I want to see him stick around. I want to see him have a role on this team, but I just – when we look at everybody across the board, if you're going to make changes, you're going to draft players and stuff, I would think Javonte is going to eventually be an odd man out.
Yeah, it's tough. Well, he's on a non-guaranteed contract next year. So that's like he's at $1.5 million next year, and then he becomes a restricted free agent in 21, summer of 21, or whatever it is, fall of 21. So we'll see. We'll see. I mean, there's really not much to say about him other than, like you said, the defense is going to be where he really sticks around. Tony Allen, I think, can be a great comparison for what he does. That he's got that energy. He's got the quickness. He's got that explosiveness. He can get out and fly in transition. If he can get his three-point shooting up, I think he needs to work on his form, but if he can get his three-point shooting up, then maybe he can supplant Semi Ojeleye at some point. Not quite the same position because Semi's so strong, but he has potential there. All right, I'm going to let you go because we've been talking long enough. I know you've got places to be. So I want to thank Nick Fryer. Go to check out his stuff on WEI. Whenever the Celtics are back, we'll be back in the same place, probably, possibly. Thanks for joining the show.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
You got it. And thanks everybody for listening. All the subscriptions. Thank you. So if you haven't subscribed, go ahead and do that. Give this the 5-star rating and a good written review. It's always very helpful. And now go ahead and tell your smart device to play the latest episode of Rejecting the Screen.